You're listening to the C Word Radio, the podcast where we ask, what the f*** does young cancer survivorship mean? With me, Helen King, and guests. Subscribe and rate on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to another episode of the C Word Radio. How are you all doing? It has been a bit of a crazy week, and a conversation I was having with someone on Instagram who was approaching their first cancer bursary got me thinking about big emotions as you come up to milestones, because she wanted to know whether it was normal to be completely losing the plot. To which I answered yes. It is so normal to feel all the feelings as you approach your diagnosis anniversary. I feel the same because this time of year, it takes me right back to what was going on 4 years ago. I think by this point I had found the lump, but I thought that it was non-lactating mastitis, as the GP that I saw had diagnosed me. And within a few weeks, I'd be diagnosed with breast cancer. This time of year just takes me right back. It's the coldness as we go into winter. Just everything reminds me of what was going on. If this is you and you're approaching an anniversary, it's okay if you're feeling a little bit weird. Cancer is so life-changing, and it can be hard to escape the reminders of when you were diagnosed or things that were going on as you were having your treatment. Before I introduce my guest, a quick plug for the newsletter sign-up I'm running. If you sign up for my newsletter, you'll go into a draw for a personalised portrait by Auckland-based designer Paige Goldsmith. You can check out her work on my Instagram, but also I'll chuck a link in the show notes so you can go check out her website. It's open to anyone in the world, so we will send your personalised portrait wherever you are. So please sign up. I don't spam, I promise. I'm not organised enough to be sending you weekly emails, but you'll get updates. My guest today is April Ward, who was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer in 2018. But to understand her journey, we need to go back to 2012, when her sister Nikki was first diagnosed with leukaemia. When Nikki's cancer returned in 2017, they were told there wasn't a lot they could do for her, and the sisters actually went through cancer treatment at the same time. In 2021, the unthinkable happened when April's fiancé and soulmate, Chris, died from lung cancer. And the tragedy of the story is that he was misdiagnosed 3 times. April is truly amazing. She has been through enormous loss in the past few years, but she has decided to turn her pain into power. She now helps other people facing cancer create a healthier lifestyle and embrace a holistic approach to their cancer. This is April's story. April, welcome. It is so great to be able to sit down and have a conversation with you.
Oh, it's so good to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I met April through Instagram, I think it was.
Yes. I reached out to you, and I'm so glad I did. I just love your podcast, and the episodes that are out there have been so inspiring. So well done. I was like, oh, great job, Helen.
Thank you so much. And I'll put all of these details in the show notes and we'll talk about it as we go on. But April has a fantastic Zoom group that meets every so often. And it is so nice just connecting with other people who are going through cancer or out the other end. It's such a fantastic thing to be part of.
It really is. I feel like for so many women with that Zoom group, the support group, is that it's empowering and healing at the same time. When you get on a call, it's a little different than just posting, right, in Instagram. You get to see each other and talk to each other and ask questions. It's just a little bit of healing because you know everyone else has been through the same thing that you have. So it's very, very powerful like that.
Yeah, and I think that sort of recognition and connection through shared experience. But there's just stuff that people who haven't been through a cancer diagnosis don't really comprehend, I think. So it's so cool to be part of.
It's so complex. You know, every Zoom call people bring forth different experiences. Even though we all had breast cancer, it's amazing to me how we still have different experiences and things to share and advice to give. So that's been a learning moment for me, to be honest with you. Even though we all maybe had breast cancers, different types of cancer, different treatments, you know, different approaches. How did you do this? So it's been great.
Regular listeners will know this year is I often like to start with probably a big question, but I go hard or go home. Because this year I have really been trying to figure out what survivorship means, especially after the diagnosis and treatment. So I would love to know, what does survivorship mean to you?
Ooh, that is a deep question, but I love it because depending on how far out I think you are from that diagnosis and the treatment, it can change with time. I was diagnosed in 2018. Now it's 2022. So survivorship to me is about finding my purpose, really understanding how I can take that trauma, right? Because it's a big deal. How I can take what happened in my journey and help someone else. You know, people say you have to be careful about what you ask for, because I certainly want to make a difference in life. I want to help other women, and I would, kind of put that out there all the time. What can I do? How can I help? And what's the meaning of life? How do I really feel more fulfilled? Let me give you a little cancer and clarify that for you. So it's been quite the journey of having that experience, but only through that experience can I help other people with their experience. So that's been the full circle, if you will, for me, of what survivorship means, is coming out the other end and being able to say, you know what, this is my story, this is what helped me, and here's how I can help you.
I mean, cancer doesn't have to mean anything, and if that's where you're at, that's absolutely fine. I think for a lot of us, you do start thinking, what does this all mean? What has just happened? What is life now when you've been through this enormous experience? So that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. You start questioning almost everything. What do I want to be doing every day? Maybe this 9-to-5 isn't top priority anymore. Your priority shift, right? So, and as a mom, I've got 2 daughters, really making sure I want to be a good example to them, but how can I take that experience and show them this is how you can get through something that's really, really hard and traumatic and help them through their life's journeys?
What were you doing before you were diagnosed? Were you working in a 9-to-5 job?
I was. I'm pretty driven, pretty type A, and I love what I do. I'm a digital marketer by trade. That kind of environment where you get to learn new things all the time. Also, I taught adjunct at the university here, so I love teaching. Of course, getting cancer was not on my radar. But what was going on, and I think what contributed to me getting cancer, is my younger sister had been diagnosed with leukemia. So I think that for me is where a lot of it started, because in 2012, she had her first round of leukemia. They told us that in 5 years, if she's cancer-free, then they would consider her to be cured. We pretty much hung on to that because she wasn't old. She was a college athlete, right? She played basketball. It was confusing that she even had cancer in the first place. But we held on to those 5 years, but in year 5, it did come back. I think that trauma got me, because then we had cancer actually at the same time. My poor mom was just freaking out. But we learned a lot. It was hard to start with her as the caregiver and then become the patient and try to understand from the universe, what is going on? What are you trying to tell me right now?
Wow. Because this is what amazes me, I think, about what you have experienced in the past few years, is that cancer has been on your doorstep a few times.
Unfortunately, yes. Nikki, my younger sister, she's a year younger than me. She had the leukemia come back, and then I was diagnosed in 2018, and then my fiance, this last year, 7 months ago now, he died from lung cancer, and he was misdiagnosed 3 times. That was overwhelming. I tell people, I think that was harder.
Yeah.
For me, because it was so unexpected and it all happened so quickly. And he was told he had 12 months. It was more like 12 days. So that's really had me on the advocacy of, I got to do something about this. I can't just sit back and let all of this tragedy continue. And how can I play a role in helping other women and other people just be more aware and help to get more of that prevention in line?
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. I don't know, I can't think of another word, but what was he misdiagnosed with? What were the doctors telling him?
So they told him he had pneumonia. He had been coughing, and he would get seasonal allergies every spring. So the timing wasn't great, but he had been a previous smoker.
Mm-hmm.
And he had stopped smoking for about 7 years.
Mm.
And he had lost a ton of weight. He lost about 20 pounds.
Wow.
So when he went to the doctor, I think our assumption was that they ruled out cancer. And that's what we assumed had happened, because when they told us he had pneumonia, we were like, shoot, well, thank God it's not cancer.
Yeah.
But they gave him an inhaler, they gave him some antibiotics, and they told him, you'll be feeling better. It's pneumonia. They took a chest x-ray, which does not detect cancer, we come to learn, and sent him on his way. But of course, he didn't get better, and the cancer he had was aggressive, and it spread. And he went back. Actually, he drove himself to the urgent care because he couldn't breathe one night. He was working out of town, so I wasn't with him. But he drove himself to urgent care. They did another x-ray. Yep, it's pneumonia. And gave him another inhaler and some more antibiotics and told him, you'll get better if this is what it is. And again, we were so relieved that it wasn't cancer that we really let our guard down, which is really frustrating for me in a lot of ways. I wish we had advocated for an MRI or a CAT scan, and we just didn't think to push it because we just kind of believed what we were told. And the other thing that he had going on, there was this huge mass on his elbow.
Wow.
That he had. And he had went to a separate doctor in the same medical group, but a different doctor about his elbow that was really painful to him. And they told him it was a type of tendonitis that he had. They did an x-ray. And they gave him this cuff to put on his arm to reposition his tendon. And they said, it's going to be a few weeks. It'll be a while. That's all it is. And we didn't make the cancer connection for a long time with that. Looking back, it's just like, if we had just caught it sooner, because by the time they did catch it, he was way in the stage 4. It was in his bones. It was in his shoulders. It was everywhere but his brain, really. But it was just so sad because we thought we had another 12 months and we didn't. We just kind of wish we had advocated and approached things differently, but we didn't. It was a tragedy because he was definitely my soulmate. He was definitely my sweetheart. It's just sad.
It is very sad. And I think that what comes up for me when you talk about that is that we trust doctors. We assume that they know what they're talking about, and they do get it wrong. But I feel like I've talked to especially younger people who are misdiagnosed, who go to the doctor saying, hey, there is something wrong. And it gets, oh, no, it's this thing. And it is a tragedy.
It's a terrible tragedy. And we tried to retrace our steps in a lot of ways. It's like, is there a certain protocol that you can't go straight to MRI? You know what I mean? Do you have to do an x-ray first and then you can do this? And then do you not want to fight the insurance companies to do an MRI? Or we make plenty of money. We would have paid for that MRI if we had known that was an issue to request, or maybe that wasn't an option for us. We had a lot of questions afterwards. Why wasn't he given an MRI, if they didn't know, past smoker, weight loss, coughing, not getting better, what kept that from happening? We'll probably never know the answer to that. But that's just one caution I guess I do bring to people, is make sure you talk about advocating for yourself. You know, you really have to speak up and try and think of other things, because we just were so alone.
It is hard, isn't it? Because of course you're going to think back and go, if only we'd known. But I guess you can only go by the information you have at hand. And then if you're being told by doctors constantly, no, it's fine, just take these antibiotics, then how do you know to question it? So what a hard situation.
I think that me having already had cancer, I was fearful. And so the relief that we felt, really, we took the pedal off the gas. We were like, shoot, we can relax in, because you're going to be okay. That we wanted to believe that so badly that we just really took it and accepted it and didn't really question anything, because it was the good news we wanted, but not still realizing that not everything had been done to clear the fact that he had cancer. It just wasn't happening.
Yeah.
Like you said, we just want to believe and know that the doctors have it all worked out, and they're people too. And there's certain restrictions they may need to operate within as well with the insurance companies that we just aren't always aware of.
Which is really difficult to get my head around. New Zealand, we have a public system, and there are certainly barriers and things that go wrong. But the more I talk to people in the US, it's weird to me to think, oh, your insurance doesn't cover this thing.
You know, that was one of the big ahas with my sister, because when we both had cancer at the same time, she would come to my appointments with me. And that's when we learned that she did not ever get the option to put that port in. I don't know if you had a port put in. Her insurance didn't cover it. And we didn't even know that. So back when she was first doing all of this, it wasn't offered. We didn't know to ask for it. And her arms were just a mess because all of her infusions had to go through her arms. And it wasn't until she saw me getting one, I was like, wait, why wasn't I ever offered before? You know, and he's like, my arms are a mess. What's going on here? And that's when I started to learn about the disparities between the treatment and the options that you get, depending on what kind of insurance you have. And it's crazy.
It is crazy.
You would never know.
Yeah, I spoke to a woman last year. Her and her partner were diagnosed with cancer within days of each other. It was crazy.
My goodness.
But she had a similar experience where basically they said, there's no one in your state that we can cover you for to get treated. So she went out of state to get treatment. And it's just, gosh, I just think of the barriers that some people go through to get necessary treatment.
It's more about money. It's if you don't have good funds and or if you don't have a job with great insurance to support you, that you're not going to be in very good shape. So it's not that they will turn you down 100%, but you just may not get everything that someone else may get that has more funding, right? That has those means to pay for the extras. And I think before you get sick through something like that, you don't even know that's happening in our country, but it is. It's just sad. It shouldn't be that way. You shouldn't get your health care aligned with how rich you are, right? Or how good your insurance is from employer to employer. Everyone should get the same standard care.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look at cancer as being such a huge part of your life. You had your soulmate has passed from cancer, your beloved sister, and then you have had your own cancer experience at the same time. How on earth do you make sense of all of that? How do you get to the end of all of these very traumatic and challenging things and go, right, now I get on with life? I can imagine it has been very challenging for you.
Absolutely. So I'll start with the Chris, my fiance, that story, because I was really very upside down. That trauma, because he actually passed away right upstairs. And so I had called 911 because he couldn't breathe. And I thought we were just going to the hospital. I thought he was going to be fine. He was talking to me. But he ended up passing away right there. And it wasn't something I expected, but I thought we had this 12 months. So I did end up having to go to a therapist, a really good one, to help me through that. Because I had an overwhelming sense of guilt for not seeing him decline like that when I was on the phone with 911 running around. It was early, so I wasn't dressed yet. Unlock the door, open the garage door. She's telling me, get his prescriptions together. So I'm running around trying to make sure I had everything together for him so when we leave, we can all just go. And he's on the sofa, not able to breathe, really what was happening. When I talked to the therapist, that was my big thing. I was like, I wish I had just stopped and sat with him. If I had known that was happening, so I'm running around, doing my thing, trying to get things ready. And she said to me, April, you were helping him. And he knows that. Just because you weren't sitting with him in that 3-minute period of time doesn't mean that he doesn't believe that you weren't helping him. Like, that's true. So that helped me get over a big block.
Yeah.
But this is what I firmly believe with Chris and I, and it's this. I believe that God knew that Chris was going to get lung cancer. That was going to be his fate, if you will. But before that happened, God made sure that Chris met his soulmate and that she moves in with him and that she's working from home so that when he goes through that, he's not alone. And I firmly believe that God has the long game in mind. So when I pass, Chris and I get to be together again. It's not over. I mean, this little snapshot in time that we have on earth is very quick. But I do appreciate, and this is how I cope, is I reframe it for myself. I'm so blessed and lucky that I was able to meet him be with him for 5 years, moved in, we were engaged, we had a wonderful, wonderful relationship, and that was a true blessing for me.
Yeah.
For sure. And with Nikki, my younger sister, she had a recurrence, and we went back to the doctors. They pretty much told us there's not a lot that they could do for her. She had been through a lot with the first round of treatment. It's back then, it was a month in the hospital to treat her, and then she had to go back for a month because my sister was a stem cell match, and they did that. So it was a long, it was intense process. But, you know, when we went back and they told us there's not a lot we can do for her. We can try some things, but usually they don't work. And we're like, what year is this? Are you kidding me? So what we ended up doing is trying to figure it out on our own, right? So we started doing as much research as we could. How can we help my sister? And we were trying all these different things. And even though she didn't make it, right, because she was too far along, that helped me. So when I got cancer, I knew what kind of research I needed to do, where to go, how to find answers for breast cancer, so that when I went through my treatment, it was so much easier. I have no nerve damage. I'm perfectly fine now. Yeah, I think the magic was with the supplements I was taking, I was able to become cancer-free in 2 months with chemo.
Wow.
And my oncologist was scratching his head, like, what's going on? And I didn't know either. I'm like, is this normal? You know, he sends me to get the MRI done. He sent me to get the ultrasound done, and it was all gone.
Wow.
So I try to think of the blessing in that, that I had this head start when I got breast cancer to know how to find answers for myself and look at research where other women had done some different things and apply that to myself.
That's amazing. Something that has always fascinates me or interests me, especially as I've been talking to different people who have had cancer, of how they've coped and things. Because I think it does take a heck of a lot of resilience to get through having cancer and treatment, let alone you've had these very close people going through it. And I'm really curious to know, how have you grappled with things like fear of reoccurrence or any of that sort of that fear that can creep in? How have you coped with that?
I feel like for me anyway, that fear improves with time. Since 2019 when I had my treatment primarily, and today, I feel like as the weeks, months go by, there's less and less fear. And for me, what helps is being proactive with other things. It's like, what toxins can I get out of my life? I walk all the time now. So I'm trying to be super proactive about all the things I know can help me be healthier, help my immune system be stronger, so that I'm not feeling like it's something that's putting itself on me. I can play defense, maybe offense, and get in front of it and be like, look, this isn't happening. You know what I mean? Not me, sister. April's going to take charge here, and I'm not waiting for my next scan. There's things I'm going to do in between time to help myself and my body. Make sure I'm living this anti-cancer lifestyle now, which is different than what I was doing before, that's for sure. That helps me. It's to feel more empowered with the decisions I'm making every day to help me be healthy.
That's really interesting. There's a lot of room for improvement in my life, but I feel like some of the big stuff that I've needed to approach has been around emotional stuff, really dealing with a lot of the grief and trauma and stuff that's come up and being open to doing that. And also really starting to listen to that intuition. Like for me, it really has been, how do I find a way of living where I'm not constantly stressed and where I can actually put myself first, because I think that was very hard before I got cancer. And it is a work in progress. I certainly have not got this perfect. But I realized even recently where I've had a lot of really intense emotions come up. And one way I think, oh, I could call this I'm depressed, but I realized a couple of days ago when I was meditating, which I never used to do. And what really, I was meditating.
What is that? What is this woo-woo stuff, right? Oh, I'm not meditating.
I'm embracing this woo-woo. But what really came up for me was, I am hurting. And I went, oh, okay. And so I don't know whether this is clinical depression or whether actually I'm going through another layer of the grief. And what's coming up is, I am hurting. And now that I have that information, I can go, what do you do with a hurt person or a hurt child? you look after them, you mother them, you parent them. And so I feel like that's part of my process at the moment. And what I'm so fascinated by what you do is I feel my next part is, okay, what other things can I look at? And I would love to know more about how you have gone about researching things that do help post-treatment or during. Like, how do you find that good research?
Like I said, I used to teach adjunct at the university here. So research has always been a huge part of me. I feel like it's my superpower in a lot of ways. But what happens for me is one thing just leads to the other. I'll never forget when I decided I'm going to be drinking green tea. That's been proven. There's all this research about how it helps with cancer and all this stuff. I'm like, well, shoot, am I drinking the right brand of green tea? And yeah, that's how my mind works. So I get online and I'm looking and I'm like, I'm not in a celestial season. That's what? It just snows well. So, okay, wait, well, then how should I be preparing this green tea? Mm. And I look that up and I find all this research on what temperature, what kind of water, what kind of bag. To me, that is just fascinating. I love that kind of stuff. Being able to know that as I'm doing things, I'm doing them correctly, and it's based on science and not just me guessing. I want to know if I need to make this green tea a certain way, just tell me. I'll do it, but my mind, I'm just always questioning. I have all these hypotheses, if you will, that I want to understand, and I just Google it. And now I do have kind of my favorite set of places to go to rethink PubMed, right? Google Scholar is another one where there's all of this research available globally now, right at our fingertips, from peer-reviewed articles where people are doing all this great stuff and great work around all kinds of diseases, not just breast cancer, not just cancer. So that has been a huge part of me being able to, over the years, gather all of my top stuff, all of my top research papers and things, and make sure I'm applying this to my life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I really like that because I had a guest recently, Johnny, who's had bowel cancer, and he does a lot of research. He's got spreadsheets and all sorts of things. But I was so intrigued by it because he's really, and I think it's that thing as well of taking his house, but he's in charge of it. And really looking at what the research says and trying different things out. Because I feel like there's either Western science, so you get cancer and you have chemo and things, which is great because we know that works. We know that's the evidence. But then on the other end of the spectrum, there's stuff that just seems a bit wacko. But I want to know, where's that mid-ground? Because I sort of feel like, of course, there must be things that can support you and may not be seen as mainstream. I think it's really hard to find where that mid-ground is because it's like the modern-day snake oil peddler, that they will take advantage of people because cancer is very scary. And so people will grab on to whatever. And yeah, I guess I'm fascinated at the moment of how do you identify it,
if you will. Yeah. What I like to do, especially before I share it with my clients, if I can find three research papers that have proven in three different case studies or research papers, and they all came to that same result, that's what gets my attention. And green tea is like that. It's one of those things that has been studied forever.
Wow.
And just to kind of help, when I would take this information to my oncologist, he just wouldn't say. It was so interesting. I'd be like, hey, should I be doing this green tea thing? And I didn't know it at the time. But in the States, our doctors are board certified, FDA licensed. So they can't just start talking about stuff outside of what's FDA approved. And I'm trying to get him to really talk to me about supplements. And he's like, so I just kind of guinea pig myself. But that's what helps me is when I can see a research study and then there's another and then there's another. Yeah. And it's breast cancer and it's something that's specific to me that I pay attention. And then if it's nothing that's harmful, I don't know if I shared with you, but and one of the things I'd love to share with all your listeners is like the icing your hands and feet during chemo. That's non-invasive. You're not even taking anything.
No.
But there's research studies that these women that were putting their hands and feet in ice during that chemo that can damage your nerves had significant, that's what I did. I had no damage at all. I knew that before I did the chemo because I had that head start. Mm. So that's why I try to tell people early on, if you're going to do that docetaxel or whatever chemo that might be damaging to the nerves, think about doing icing your hands and feet down so that you don't have that level of damage that otherwise you could really get.
I wish I'd known about that because I had docetaxel, which I'm assuming is just like a cousin of paclitaxel.
Probably so.
And I still have slight numbness in my fingertips. And what I really noticed is it is getting better, is my dexterity has been not quite as good. And I really noticed it when I got back into things like sewing. It was, I would drop things and that sort of stuff. And it's kind of amazing to think something so simple as icing your hands and feet would be
so simple. And you know, and I wonder if they got that idea because you've heard of women putting those ice caps on their head, right? So that their hair wouldn't fall out. It's really the same to just reduce the blood flow to a certain area of your body so that the chemo doesn't impact it like that. And I talk about it all the time, but I see more and more people doing that now because it's so easy to do.
Yeah, it's really interesting because we probably will have heard the interview I'm talking about, a fantastic woman in the UK who is a breast surgeon, or was a breast surgeon, and she's had breast cancer twice, and so it was a very interesting discussion. But what I loved talking to her was I got to ask a lot of the questions that you have that don't often get answered. But one of them I've always thought about was I had all that chemo and the radiation and stuff, and no one told me this is what it does to you. And she talked about the fact that chemo ages you by about 10 years. I thought, that makes sense.
You're like, now I know.
Yeah. And I think I want to know this stuff. I want to know about, well, how do I support my body afterwards physically? What should I be doing? Because I don't know what it's like in the States, but it really feels like you're just scrambling around trying to find this information of what actually works best. Like, what should I be doing to build my body back up? Yeah.
We are, it's frustrating that we each individually scramble on our own. When in reality, now I've got all this knowledge, you've got all this knowledge, right? That we need to be telling the new girls or whoever, hey, wait a minute, hold on, let me explain stuff in a little more detail. So I don't know about where you live, but you know, you only get like 10, 15 minutes with your doctor. Checking boxes, they're on the computer, and then they're out.
Yeah.
So, you know, under having that deep knowledge, like you said, of what the real side effects are and what you can really expect doesn't always get brought up. I'll add that, you know, as I have more and more people that I'm talking to as well, it is amazing. Even Canada's different. What they get told, what they have told. Every country seems to be different.
Yeah.
So it's just like, how do we fix that? And that's part of what I want to help do.
Yeah. And I think it's important because it's even things like chemo brain is a thing, and that actually chemo can impact your brain almost like a brain injury. And then if you are someone who is also in menopause, I mean, you've put those two things together, and it's someone has opened up your head and just taken an egg beater into your brain. And I just think that is so challenging to deal with when you are trying to go back to work, you're trying to run your household. But the oncologist never said to me, you're going to feel like you are in a fog for the next 8-9 months.
And I think what's challenging, too, is when you're done with treatment, they don't give you a little, hardly any advice afterwards. How do you heal from all that? And maybe what kind of things can help reduce those side effects to begin with? And those conversations just don't get had. And I don't understand why. I don't get it. I know my oncologist has seen probably hundreds of women. It's almost as if they need to circle back and say, okay, April, Sherry's, and Lisa, how can I do this differently? I know he's never had breast cancer, obviously, but you know, somehow we've got to bridge this knowledge gap that's happening.
I think so too. I have actually found the mental recovery, or mental, emotional, spiritual, however you want to put it, that has been as challenging as the physical. And I guess it's hard because that's not what people go to med school for. All those years to talk about your patient's mental well-being. But I was broken. Like, when I finished, I was not the same person anymore. And I was not prepared to go through an identity crisis, almost. Like, I am this bald, bloated person with one breast. My body no longer looks like mine. And everyone's, yay, you got through it. You can go back to normal now. And it's like, I messed up.
I need a do-over. But you know what, Helen? I think part of the challenge, and nobody mentally helps us with this, is that, especially when you're done with treatment and you do have a bald head and your body's trying to deal with all these toxins, is, you know, people assume you'll just go back to being who you were. And you're just not the same person. And we have to embrace, at least for me, I had to embrace my, this is where I'm going to go now that I'm this new person. I have this new knowledge. And this new body, how do I move forward to become the best version of myself still?
Yeah.
And you're talking about depression and the different emotions that you can have. Mm. One of the most important pieces of advice I was given is you're not your emotions.
No.
You know, you think about your emotions living outside of you and you get to look at them and experience them. You don't hate any of them. It's okay. You're angry. Tell me you're angry. You know, give you a hug. But day to day, especially, you can't be happy all the time.
No.
Just like you're not sad all the time. But we're not, as people, our emotions. And that helped me tremendously. Just to be like, okay, I'm just experiencing this right now. All right. Can I shift myself out of it? Something awesome? Usually I can. And it just takes practice for me to be like, okay, where's this anxiety coming from? You know, what am I experiencing? And what are some things that I can do to shift my emotions or at least invite some other emotions in? Anxiety's here with me. Hey, happy, can you come and help me get out of here? Or, joy, gratitude, can you come in here? And I get all four of you in the room together. So that's how I try and deal with my emotions when they start to bubble up, anxiety and fear and stress. We all have them.
It's so true. And that has definitely been my challenge and my experience of, the emotional side. And I have done a lot of work in the past year, like with a counselor, or I've worked with other people around that stuff. As much as I'm not pleased I had cancer, I would not go, I'd go through that again and all of that sort of thing. But I think the gift it has given me is it has forced me to deal with a lot of the stuff that I just wasn't dealing with prior, and has given me, I guess more of an emotional freedom. At the moment, it's challenging because I think I'm going through another layer of the grief and that sort of thing. But as you say, it's okay. This is normal. I'm human. I've been through a lot. Let's just let these emotions get out. And if I need to cry, or if I need to be angry, or if I need to whatever, that's actually okay. It's better in the long run if you let that stuff out.
You just said the magic words, right? It's like you go through this experience and you have to choose what you're going to do with it moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, am I going to get emotionally stronger, right? Am I going to make the choice to become healthier, you know what I mean, and take this new path? Or am I going to just try and get back to where I was? You know, there's a lot of decisions, I guess, we need to make as breast cancer survivors.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. It has put me in a position where I've become much more emotionally mature. I meditate all the time. Mm. I exercise all the time. I just started yoga, which I've been wanting to do, but I walk almost every day, no matter the weather.
Yeah.
So it has created a better version of myself. And I'm thankful for that. It forced me into it. I'm not sure if I needed a cancer diagnosis to make that happen, but here I am, just trying to make choices to choose to, you know, make it a better life for myself.
Absolutely. And I guess as we're sort of rounding out the conversation, although I feel like I could pick your brain and talk to you about these things for a long time. If someone is either just diagnosed or they've come through the other end and they want to address their health or healing, where is a good place to start to understand how they can support themselves?
Gosh, that's a great question. There are many emotional stages of cancer. You know, I don't know about you, but there's 10 stages. One of them is denial, anxiety. When I was first diagnosed, I thought I had it. And then when they told me I did, I was like, no, I don't.
Yes.
No, you're wrong. Giving yourself grace with those emotions and knowing that as time passes, you won't always be in that high anxiety state is so important. And equally as important is really making sure you have a holistic point of view regarding your diagnosis. So your mind, body, spirit, you talk about mentally how it was challenging for you. You really can't disconnect the mind from the body. It is a part of your body. When your body goes through stressors, your mind's going to go through stressors. So making sure you address all of those pieces so that you can really return to that best version of yourself and feel confident in the decisions you're making. It's a journey, right? You're not going to get there overnight, but you know, having that holistic approach is what I would really encourage people to pursue. It's not just about removing it. It's about mentally, spiritually, physically, really addressing where all this is coming from and really refining who you are and becoming the badass that you are as a woman.
Yeah. Yes. And if people have really like have resonated with you and they want to work with you, how can people find you?
Sure. So my website is remissionlife.com, or they can send me an email directly. And my email address is myremissionlife@gmail.com. And they can reach out to me, ask me questions. You know, I have lots of resources for folks. I mostly work with breast cancer women, but I have had other clients as well. And I would love to help support someone that, whether you're first starting and you're newly diagnosed or you're in remission and you want to really make sure you're doing things to help your body stay in remission, I would love to support them.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you so much for joining me. It has been such a pleasure to learn more about your experience and your insights. So thank you.
Thank you, Helen, for having me. I always love talking to you. So it's great to see you today.
Thanks so much for listening. The C Word is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM and anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/the C Word.
my mind. If I should want to turn around, no, it won't be hard to find another loving clown. It's fast to think what all it will change it with. You love it, oh, run away. Get up in the morning, look in the mirror.
eternity in the city. Let the carbon and monoxide choke my thoughts away. Your pretty body's health dissolving memories. There can never be what she was to me. She's gone. She's gone. Oh, I better learn how to face it. She's gone. She's gone. Oh, I pay the devil to replace her. She's gone. She's gone.
little ditty about Jack and Diane. Two American kids growing up in the heartland. Jack is gonna be a football star. Diane's debutante backseat of Jackie's car. Chili dog, outside taste freeze. Diane sitting on Jackie's lap, got his hands between her knees. Jackie say, hey Diane, let's run off behind the shady trees. Dribble off those Bobby Brooks, let me do what I please. Say, oh yeah, life goes on, long after the thrill of living is gone. Say, of living is gone, walk on. Checks his back, flexes his thoughts for the moment. Scratches his head and does his best James Dean. Let the Bible Belt come and save my soul.